Hey, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Chris. We're the hosts of True Believers, a comic book podcast, our weekly show about all things comics.
Welcome to episode 18 of True Believers, our two-week-long anticipated review of The Eternals.
Just Eternals. As you know from episode 16, Eternals is a movie based on characters and concepts created by the legendary Jack Kirby in 1975. With the looming specter of Kang the Conqueror in the Loki show and the promise of otherworldly threats like the Dweller in Darkness and Shang-Chi in The Legend of Ten Rings, The Eternals have clearly been brought into phase four of the MCU to drastically raise the stakes.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to let you talk about The Eternals first because you already know my thoughts on it. So what did you like about this?
Everybody was fine. Oh, dumbass question is that.
I actually put that on the Twitter like immediately. I was like, everybody in this movie was very pretty. And that's just that.
That's, you know, okay, listen, we've met before, and you know that's what I base my enjoyment on movies on. Unless the movie is unbearably bad, if everybody was fine, I had a good time. Like, Batman versus Superman, you know, Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, Extended Director's Edition, was so goddamn awful that I sat through that movie miserable, and I hated the entire thing. The Eternals was good enough, and everybody was fine. So I got what I wanted. I had a great time.
Overall, I think this movie was really good, but there was just, you know, parts of it that I just never got on board with.
And you
I
just have like, beef with flashbacks, and this I do is the have... only kind of movie that actually benefits from a flashback, just because everything happens over several thousand years. So I could see the benefits of it, and also in movies like Black Panther, because they were only every flashback was like 2 seconds long. I was like, all right, you understood the assignment.
I do have beef with flashbacks, yeah. But this had like thousands of years of flashbacks. Like, this entire movie was basically a flashback. So it felt like they were trying to put a lot into this movie. Like, a lot of, I mean, you had to. There's thousands of years of these people, but.
And I don't think it would work if they did the entire thing in chronological order. It just wouldn't have the same impact. But also, I feel like some points were like, okay, so. The movie was cool. This is a very spoiler-filled review, by the way, because we're going to tell the entire plot. So just get ready for that. So Salma Hayek dies within like the first 30 minutes of this movie. And it was a long-ass movie. It was 157 minutes, apparently. So that's like an hour, two hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? How many minutes? I forgot what you just said. How many minutes?
157 minutes is like 2 hours.
That's like 2 hours, 60
plus 60 is 126. It's like, wait, hold on. That's 2 hours plus. It's like 2 hours and 30 minutes. That was long as hell.
Okay,
it didn't seem long when we were watching it, though, aside from I have a hard time sitting in movie theaters or sitting down and watching anything for more than about 45 minutes. So that's the only reason in which it seemed long. It wasn't a movie that dragged at all. There was consistently something that was going on.
I didn't realize this movie was that long, so I will give it that, too, because I didn't realize it was that long. It didn't feel like it lasted forever. So that is kind of impressive. I thought that movie was like an hour and a half, not 2 hours and 37 minutes. Holy shit.
And not only that, we went and saw that movie with six other people. Like, that was a coordinated effort with eight people.
Yeah, okay, well, okay, so there's something good about that. I mean, this movie was good. Like, I'm gonna shit on it a lot just because I didn't like a lot of it, but no, that's impressive.
No, really. It's nothing that there was nothing that was really bad in the movie. Everything that I didn't like was just something that I thought was just okay.
My biggest beef with this movie was how they did Thena. Like, the whole character arc with Thena was just so dumb and unnecessary. And why did you take, like, the best Eternal just to weaken her a lot like they did, you know? And that, honestly, they could have told the same story without even having her storyline like that. Because what happened is they gave her, what was it called?
It's mad mind, some shit like that. But I feel like we should talk about what's going on in the movie first before even just mention that. Okay, so when the movie kicks off, it's the Eternals, all 10 of them. I'm trying so hard not to make a Birdman joke. But they get sent to Earth, right? And they're like, okay, it's Ajax, who can talk to the Celestial Arishem, who's sent them to Earth. It's Ajax, Cersei, Icarus, Kingo, Sprite, Makari, Gilgamesh, Thena, Druig, and Bastos, period. So they get sent on their weird pizza-shaped spaceship to kill the deviants. They kill all the deviants, and then they just kind of break apart.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Druig leaves to go which you learn in like the 17th flashback, that Druig leaves to go be peaceful with the humans and whatever. And everybody else just kind of breaks apart for no reason.
Don't they do that right at the beginning? I really thought they did that right at the beginning. I thought they just had all their beef like right at the beginning.
No, girl, it was like the 18th flashback that this one finally happened. There was so many flashbacks because it starts off really with Cersei. She's in the club with Dan Whitman. Remember, with Sprite, who's pretending to be an adult.
No, they don't start off in the club. They start off with her being late to teach the kids at the museum.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and then then she goes to the club. No. Then does she go home with Sprite? Or they end up at home somehow. Then they go to the club
for Dan Whitman's birthday.
There's an earthquake. Yeah.
Yeah, the earth. Okay, see, here's another thing I didn't like about the movie was like how they did Cersei's powers. Like I know they have to like crazy underpower these people just so that way they can have grounds in this universe of the MCU, you know? But the fact that they just made it so that way she can only change non-sentient forms, I was like, nah, Cersei's better than that. Don't do her like that. She's better than that. Because, you know, when that earthquake happened, the thing fell off the wall and she just turned the thing into dust before it crushed a kid.
My thing was, why didn't you fix that back, girly? why didn't you put it back?
Maybe she can't. I don't know. Maybe because once it turned to dust, it was like, I don't know. It was weird.
My thing would have been if they said, I don't know what that looks like to fix it. That would have made more sense. But I was like, girl, what was that? Because you can't just be turning shit into dust.
First of all, this was like a museum. So this is definitely some kind of like ancient artifact. Yeah, like you can't just be doing that stuff. But
that was my thing too. I was like, and then they end up at the club and then, oh, Sprite's little nasty ass is out here trying to talk to people in an adult form. Also, for some reason, Dane doesn't think it's weird that Sprite like is in a whole ass club with them.
Yeah, he really doesn't, because Sprite just shows up as a child while they're like making out in the hallway. Yeah, how come nobody questioned the child? I didn't even think about that.
That's the thing I noticed the most out of the movie, because I was sitting there like, no.
Sprite's a shapeshifter, so I know that she was pretending to be like full grown in the club, but still, Dane saw her as a child and didn't say anything. He's just like, you can come to my birthday party in the fucking nightclub in London or wherever we're at. I think it was London. It was insane.
What was the purpose? I'm just not being fair because I was like, no.
Yeah, no. So what even happened? Okay, so then they leave the club because Sprite wants to go home. Deviant attacks. Yep.
And Icarus comes in to save the day. Yeah. Because they were not fighting off this deviant well. And I was like, thank you, Neil Gaiman. Oh, Andrew was very right. I actually ended up reading the Neil Gaiman run of the Eternals like right after we recorded our last episode, literally not even 20 minutes after. And this does kind of follow along with that in that they all don't have the same powers. Like I think only Icarus can fly and shoot laser beams out of his eyes. Kingo, you know, they all have different powers. So I don't understand how they're effective as a team
I don't want to shit on that too hard because I know they had to do something in the MCU. Can't all be the same person, but really it was kind of like Kingo's power was to shoot bolts out of his finger guns. Like, where did that come from? Y'all are just doing things now.
It looks cool, though. I'm not mad at it.
It did look cool. Like, when I said in the theaters, I was like, bro, if I had that power, I would totally take advantage of it. Just finger guns everywhere. It's cool as fuck.
The power that I would take advantage of the most, honestly, it would be Makari's. I would be everywhere I wasn't supposed to be. Ooh, like that Ludacris song where he's like, what you got in your house? That's me.
I would definitely want Cersei's powers. You know how unstoppable I'd be? Even non-sentient forms. If I could just change into what I wanted, I would be unstoppable.
Oh, you're thinking small because you pissed me off. Ooh, your car is about to be a block of wood.
I wouldn't. I would do something like petty so you don't even know until you try to drive away.
No, it'll be the
turn engine, the brakes into air.
imagine trying to crank that bitch and don't nothing happen.
Yeah.
Imagine you open the hood and your car is filled with water.
I would be so pissed off. Either way,
the gas tank.
Oh my God, when you run out of gas and you can't put gas in it, can you imagine? That would be insane. And nobody would know because nobody knows that Cersei is like a magic eternal. I don't even know. Her power is literally just to change non-sentient forms into whatever she wants.
It doesn't even make sense. Anyway, back on this deviant. So the deviant can heal itself like Ajax can. So it gets away and they're all like, girl, what the hell? Because the deviants are supposed to have been gone for like thousands of years. So when Icarus comes, they have this little moment where Sprite is like, Icarus, you're here, because it's Richard Madden and he's really fine. And he's like, oh, hey, he has like a little line too. He's like, hey, ladies. And I was like, because he understood. Him and Dane, they have a little face off. And I feel like that was supposed to be like for the viewers, they're like, ah, Game of Thrones. Ah.
Oh, definitely. Because they stood there, looked at each other. And it was totally like a Game of Thrones joke.
And they spend the whole movie like asking questions about each other, which is really funny because I'm like, jealous. I see the jealousy in both people's. Well, Dane wasn't even really jealous. He was just like making jokes because he was like, at the end of the day, that's my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Because Icarus, we know at this point that Icarus is Cersei's ex-boyfriend. So, you know, they know each other, but also
more like her ex-husband because they got married at one point. I was like,
oh, yeah, they did.
In a flashback.
Does it even count if you get married and you live forever? Because, you know, how long does a marriage certificate last? Because it's for life.
This was pre-certificates.
This is pre-certificates. Yeah. Either way, how long does that marriage last if you live forever?
Once you abandon me, that's when it ends.
Yeah, fuck you, Icarus. Because Icarus just abandoned this hoe. Not this hoe. This was Cersei. She got to put some respect on her name. But
yeah, but we love hoes over here.
We do. We do indeed.
Anyway, so they're like, okay, Icarus, Sprite, and Cersei, they gang up. They're like, okay, gang, we got to go find Ajax. So they
my big thing at this point was like, how did Cersei and Sprite not kill this deviant? Like, what have y'all been doing this whole time that y'all can't kill one deviant together? I know it can heal, but it's like, you still should have been able. Is
they don't have any battle ability. Like, are they, first of all, why are y'all together if y'all are the useless Eternals?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Sprite can do literally anything. So where were you, Sprite? All Sprite did was that Naruto clone bullshit, make a bunch of little sprites. And seriously.
Like what was the purpose of this? I don't understand how y'all, what was the purpose of making you this way to kill deviants if the two of you cannot kill a deviant on your own?
That was also my thing with Druid, because Druid's whole power is to take over humans' mind. I was like, how does that help you against a deviant? At all.
Unless you're meant to use the humans as cannon fodder.
Which is, I mean, the Celestials are kind of that fucked up.
Also, so maybe. I feel like that's just, I don't understand how Druid was ever meant to be like heroic in any way, because that is not a power that you could have and be a hero.
Yeah, no, you can't be a good guy who takes over people's minds. That's your only power.
So Ajax is, they go to Ajax's house in South Dakota, and I'm like, yes, our queen, Salma Hayek, purr. She dead as hell. Like, she's outside. Miss Keisha, oh my gosh, you fucking dead.
I said that in the movie, and the Christian was like having a moment because we just found the dead body, and I was like, Miss Keisha. That shit was so funny.
And then I told you to shut up, but then I said, oh my gosh, you fucking dead.
That was really fun. Nobody thought I was funny except me. So yeah, no, Miss Keisha's dead now. Miss Salma Hayek.
Then, like, not just that she did, like, the house is all open. And I was like, what? It doesn't look like there was any sign of, like, struggle or fight. And then she, like, they notice that the back door is just flapping. And they walk through the back door. And literally, she is sitting there, like, flat on her back, posed, dead, like, ready to go in the casket.
Yeah.
And her body looks like it's been sucked dry. So that just was disturbing. And I was like, well, why the hell? They did all this advertisement. They were like, Salma Hayek, the Eternals. She's looking beautiful and gorgeous. I was like, okay, Ajax, the leader of the Eternals.
That's exactly where I was at too, because they did so much advertising with Salma Hayek. So
this
I was like, okay.
Stomp the Yard came out and they were like, Chris Brown, Chris Brown, Chris Brown. This is Chris Brown's first movie. Chris Brown, Chris Brown. And if you watch Stomp the Yard, Chris Brown gets killed.
It was exactly like that. We're 20 minutes in and she's dead, and it's like, okay, so we only get her at flashbacks at this point, so it's like, okay.
And like directly after they find her, Sprite is using her illusion powers to show the last time they saw each other. She was dancing with her in her kitchen, and she told me to go be with Cersei in London. And I was like, makes sense, because you kind of annoying. So no, I didn't mean that. But if I'm immortal, TBH, I don't want no child around crapping my style.
A child that can't age. Yeah.
Clearly. Now we're going into the next part. They're like, okay, we need to reunite the Eternals
and the family back together.
Yes, period. I love the way Richard Madden says it, because he's like, Eternals. And it sounds like his voice is hugging every single letter in the word.
So yeah, now we had to go get Dina and
King. No, first we go get Kingo. No,
sorry. Yeah, I had that in the wrong order. Kingo. Kingo fucking the Bollywood star. That shit was hilarious.
That's like, my favorite part of like having read the Eternals a little bit, like, because Kingo is he's from the Okinawan settlement of Eternals, and he's like a movie star in the modern day, and he makes like he likes to play samurai because he was one. So I thought that was cool when they had Kumail Nanjiani in, and he's like a Bollywood star. Not only is he a Bollywood star, this motherfucker is a like fourth or fifth generation Bollywood star. He's been pretending to be his own like dad and grandpa for years.
That shit is fucking hilarious. And when it opens up with that scene when we first see Kingo for the first time, and he's just dancing, I was like, what in the fuck is happening right now?
And I've never really thought, like, no offense to Kumail Nanjiani, but usually I only see him in like comedy roles. I've never really thought of him as like handsome before, or he's never been put forward to me as like a, you know, romantic prospect, but he was there looking good.
Yeah, no, he was. I have to even say the same thing, because I've never thought he was, I mean, you know, like, he's a good looking dude, but I was never attracted to him. And then you see him in this one, I was like, I get it.
Who?
I get it.
Mm.
I totally get it.
The movie that he's making is like The Legend of Icarus,
which is hilarious. They made so many references to the comic books in this movie that are so low-key that even I almost missed them, and this was another one of that was just so good. Like, Chloe Zhao really did that with this.
We'll talk about this later, but they messed up my favorite reference to the comics. They just chose not to use it, and that was a form of disappointment to me, but I'm not even mad at it. So you meet, not only do you meet Kingo, the Bollywood star, you meet his valet, Karun, I believe that's his name, who he sticks with them the whole movie to film a documentary for Kingo about the Eternals, because Kingo wants to be he is famous, but he wants it to be known. He's like, oh, people are gonna know that we're the Eternals again. Oh, period. I'm on the way. He's like, the Avengers, they got a little bit too much clout for his liking, because he was like, bitch, I got powers too.
I like how quickly he was like ready to join the team too, because at first he was like, no, I can't, I'm filming a movie. But then they're like, Ajak is dead.
The world
is
dead. All right,
I'll join the team. I got it. Like, everyone else took a little bit of more convincing, like Druig and Thena and everybody. They took a little bit more time, but he was like, nah, man, let's do this. Let's save the world, guys. So yeah, he joins the team. They have a little moment on the plane because they're flying to go see Thena and Gilgamesh.
Gilgamesh.
Now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So at the beginning of the movie, while so the last of the Deviants attacked during the Spanish invasion of the Aztec capital, and so they are not allowed to help at all because they're not supposed to interfere in human events, which was kind of fucked up. Like, I wasn't feeling it.
That doesn't make sense to me, because of the plot twist at the end, which we'll get to, but it didn't make sense to me that they're not allowed to fight or like help humans or in any way. Like, it's like, what are y'all here for other than killing the
humans? Actually, it made perfect sense to me once we determined what they were there for. But then we find out Thena is the baddest bitch in the Eternals, and she's got this condition called Mad Weary, which makes her turn on the other Eternals, like while she was fighting the Deviants, and she's like literally starts to attack them. She's like, everybody's going to die. And then she's like, pulls out her weapon, like the bad bitch that she is, and she's like, bop, 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 and starts getting on everybody's ass. Gilgamesh calms her down, and they're like, okay, so we need to erase her memories. And then she's like, no, I won't be myself. And Gilgamesh like volunteers to be with her for like the rest of time to keep her calm. So now we're on our way to Australia on Kingo's freaking private jet.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, because why did we have to do Thena like this? They give her, because okay, it's so I did not like this at all, because it didn't need to be in the movies. And it's like, why are you going to take the baddest bitch of all the group and then make her the weakest one just because of foreshadowing. Just
a little mental illness.
It was foreshadowing is all they were trying to do. And it was like the dumbest foreshadowing.
It didn't make sense. And also, that's like trying to say bad bitches can't just be mentally ill.
Yeah, exactly. And because it causes more problems later on. So it's like, you know, could have left this out. It just caused more problems. It didn't need to be in the story. Don't take Angelina Jolie like this. Don't do her.
They couldn't just be together because they was in love or something, because Gilgamesh and Athena had some of the best chemistry in the movie. And I was like, oh, period. They are in love.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, honestly, because he was her caretaker, basically. And it was like, why are you so sexual with each other? That's your caretaker, like, you know? Yeah, it's your sister, also.
Anyway, so they're in Australia, and the deviant is dead as hell, because Athena and Gilgamesh get things done. See, my issue with the Eternals was, why the hell are Sprite, Ajak, and Cersei, why were they as, like, the weakest people? Why were they by themselves? That didn't make sense.
Yeah, no, it really didn't make sense.
They didn't have no skills. Yeah, I don't know how to, you know.
Because half of these people aren't able to kill an Eternal with their powers, like
a deviant.
A deviant, yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, it makes sense when they all have the same powers and some of them are just better at them than other people. Like, that's when it really makes sense. But in this case, it doesn't, because Gilgamesh and Theta, they got a deviant dead on the ground.
Yeah, Gilgamesh is literally the strongest, you know, so he could kill an Eternal. Athena can obviously kill an Eternal because she's just a warrior.
A deviant.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. Why do I keep saying that? They can kill deviants, but, you know, Cersei can't until later on.
But it's not like Athena is, it's not like she's, like, she can't do anything or whatever. She just gets plagued by attacks of this mad, weary thing, but otherwise she's perfectly fine. Yeah. But after this attack, she is sitting there just drawing pictures, and during her episodes apparently she like just draws pictures, and there are all these destroyed planets, and like the artwork is like incredibly disturbing. And
yeah
Cersei, when Ajak is dead, Cersei gets a sphere that Ajak was using to contact Ereshkigal. It goes directly from Ajak's body into Cersei's. And after looking at all of the weird art and talking to Gilgamesh and getting like the world, it was like the best pep talk, because it was so simple. He was like, just listen, you know.
He said, stop trying. If you stop trying, it might be easier, because you're trying to push something that's not meant to be, or some shit like that. And I was like, okay, respect. Or something
that's not supposed to be hard. So okay. Cersei is now the prime Eternal, you know. So she uses the sphere and establishes a connection to Ereshkigal, who is disgustingly large. The Celestials aren't really that big in the comics. Like, if you read the Neil Gaiman run, it ends with one of them just in New York.
Yeah, just in New York. But this Ereshkigal is bigger than planets. Like, he's as big as probably the galaxy. I don't really know, but he's like disturbingly big, how big this guy is. So whenever we see him next to, what is her name, Cersei, it was crazy. And then they start talking, and then basically he tells them, like, hey, what happens is us Eternal, or oh my god,
I know who Celestials.
I know who these people are, I promise. It's like these Celestials, we create universes, we create galaxies. But here's the thing though, there's one sleeping in Earth, because this is how they're born, and once there's enough humans, it will kind of like take their consciousnesses almost, and that's how it's born. But we have to do it, it's the circle of life, you know. So I'm sitting here at this point, I'm like, this makes sense, you know.
Well, the thing was, it wasn't just a certain number of humans. They had to be intelligent and advanced enough. So they needed, that was the thing that was so sinister. They needed intelligent life. They needed advanced, intelligent life that had come up to a certain point of evolution.
Yeah.
And that's why Druig's powers made so much sense.
That's exactly what they didn't make sense. Because if that's what they wanted, Druig had the power. Because I don't think his power has any limits. Like, he can control as many minds as he wants within like a certain radius, I assume. I don't really quite know how that part works, but he can control hundreds of people. They've already proven that. So it's like, he could have easily. No, it
makes sense why they have him and Phastos there. Because like, it just doesn't make sense, because they didn't all know what the plan was. I was like, oh, okay.
But that's what I'm saying. If they knew what
the plan was, this would have made more sense.
If they're robots, they could have had this done within like 1,000 years instead of taking 1,000,000 to do this. Like, this could have been done quick, if that's what y'all really wanted.
I think the Celestial also needs to grow, too.
I'm just saying, there was like, it didn't make any sense. honestly, but because they could have had this
power,
done.
Wait, not power. But the fact that they weren't allowed to intervene in wars and stuff, that was the part where that made sense to me. I was like, ah, I see. Because what brings the most innovation out of humans? War and destruction.
But then that goes back to, why does Druig have this power at all? This doesn't benefit anybody in any way except make... I don't even know. Like, it's going to make Druig the villain later. I firmly believe that. But like, up right now, what does that do? What was the point of his power ever?
Listen, no, I'm choosing to believe in Druig. I'm choosing to believe this is like a M'Baku type situation, and Nakia too, where they were like, y'all are villains, but now y'all are beloved and trusted allies and romantic interests. And also M'Baku was fine. Druig, he doesn't really do it for me. He's not what I like, but him and Makari were so cute.
They had the best chemistry out of all of them. Makari and Druig, every fucking moment that they were together on screen, I was like, oh, they want to fuck. They want to fuck right now.
And will. So it's, but the thing that was so interesting about what Arishem was telling, Cersei, is that he was like, oh yeah, you know how y'all believe that y'all came from the planet Olympia? It's not real. I made you guys in the thing that brings Eternals back to life.
Ship, I can't remember what that's called.
Well, it's called the World Forge. No, not the Domo, but that's just their ship. But he made them in the World Forge, and in the comics, there's a thing called the Great Machine, and that's what they use to bring back the dead people. But I thought the World Forge was actually just a cooler name. I was ready. And that's where their memories are all stored, because not only are they all like robots or something, they were created to kill deviants and then, you know, to assist in the destruction of worlds. They've done it a bunch. They've all been doing this together for years. There's no Olympia for them to go home to. Just because I thought it was a weird change from the comics, because the Eternals live on Olympia, which is like Mount Olympus, and they're all like gods. Well, they're not gods. They're just incredibly awesome, superpowered people, and the Celestials are like gods, but they're like demigods, kind of.
Yeah.
And when they said they were from the planet Olympia, it really threw me off. But then I was like, oh, I see why we've made this change. There is no Olympia.
It's
bye-bye Yellow Brick Road.
It felt like a weird thing for me too. That was another thing I just didn't like. I was like, why did y'all have to do it like this? Which goes back to, like, if they've done it thousands of times, how is Arishem the villain? Because they're trying to make Arishem the villain in this one, and it's like,
he's not really the villain. Like, if that's the way the circle of life goes, it is understandable.
That's what I'm saying. It's understandable. And they were definitely trying to make him the villain because they said, we have to stop Arishem, blah, blah, blah. And we have to stop the...
It's not even necessarily that he's the villain. It was just that they did not agree. You can't say that he was wrong. I mean, you can, because, you know, billions of humans would die, but there would be millions of planets. Like, it would be probably a whole new galaxy born when Tiamat rose. So I was like, eh.
Exactly. So that's exactly why I was like, how is he the villain of this story when he's not doing anything wrong? He's doing what he's supposed to be doing, you know?
They all have their meeting together. And tell me why, like, only how many Eternals are we at right now? Because we're all in Gilgamesh and Athena's place in Australia. So it's like Kingo, Karun, Gilgamesh, Athena, Sprite, Cersei, and Icarus, right? So that's only like seven people.
Yeah.
One of those people doesn't agree, and it's Kingo. He's like, well, if that's the way it's got to be, then that's that. And they're all like, no, we love Earth. It's our home. And he's like, okay, I'll still go with you guys, though.
Yeah, pretty and much.
That's when they did. This also when they determined that Mad Weary, Athena's weird sickness, it's a result of a botched memory wipe after the last time that they were brought around to, you know, bring about the birth of a Celestial. Yeah. So nothing's wrong with this woman. She just has all these memories, like, and that's why probably why they have a term for it, because it's happened before. So they're like, oh, they got Mad Weary because
that's why they wanted to send her back to the ship to like erase her memories.
Yeah, that's why Ajax was like, I'm ready. That makes me wonder, like, was Ajax mind wiped too? Did she just know? It was crazy. Anyway, so they're
Ajax
like,
knew. She definitely knew, because they even said it to Arishem. Seriously, did she's like, Ajax knew about this, and they were like, yeah, she was a part of this, because she tells Icarus
she retained all her other memories. You know what I'm saying?
I'm pretty sure she did. That's why she was the Prime Eternal. That's just, I mean, they don't ever tell you exactly yes or no, but I'm pretty sure she did.
It's like implied, but it's also kind of ambiguous. So I don't know.
Okay. So, but anyways, now that we have all them on the team and then Kingo is the only one that's like, I don't agree, but I'm gonna go with y'all. So
then they go to find Druig.
Then they go to find Druig, who lives in the middle of the Amazon, just with a bunch of humans who have like a almost not necessarily primitive civilization, but they just have their houses in the trees. They're happy like that, you know?
Well, it's not even primitive. It's like they're modern. They just don't have a lot of technology.
No. So there's Druig just living in the forest with a bunch of people. You know, they're all happy. And then what did they say? They made some comment at that point with Kingo, I think, said it. And he's like, don't believe all. It's not all happiness and butterflies here, basically.
He was like, this is some bullshit. Anyway, they all get, first of all, Druig, for some reason, he has all these, well, not for some reason, because his power is low-key evil. He starts talking through people's mouths before you even see him, and he's like, oh, hello, Eternus.
Yeah, that shit was crazy. That shit was just weird. So then Druig is basically like, damn, this seems like not my problem. I don't know, guys. But then the deviants attack, and then he's like, okay, gang, let's do this.
Yeah, and this is when we find out that Cersei's powers have shifted, because when her and Icarus are attacked by one of the deviants, she turns it into a tree, and they're like, hold on, you can't do that.
Yeah, they were like, where did that come from?
She goes, we ain't never honestly, even did this before.
I don't know where this came from. I just be doing things. But this is also another problem with this mad weary bullshit, is because one of the deviants, because it's like three or four deviants that attack, so the gang kind of gets split up a little bit. Thena's stuck having like a mental breakdown behind a tree while a deviant is attacking Gilgamesh. And because she's having this breakdown, Gilgamesh dies, because she could have easily killed that thing and it would have been done. So why did we put this in the fucking story? You know what I mean?
And then the deviant leader, who is Crow, like we determined that he eats Gilgamesh, kind of. He just absorbs his power and then he gets more human looking and he can talk. And he's like, I have all of Gilgamesh's memories. I know. Now, he gives a whole, like, villain speech, and he, like, promises to kill the Eternals. But he's like, y'all exterminated my people. And I was like, bitch, that's what we're supposed to do. Like, y'all was doing y'all job. We did ours.
Honestly, though, that part was kind of cool with Crow becoming more and more human. I was like, oh, I want to see where this goes. But it's like, I don't want more Eternals to die, you know?
It didn't go nowhere. And also, I was sitting up like, why you having beef? Get some chicken instead. Like, we're trying to go fight the Celestial. Y'all need to be on my side, ho.
Honestly, get with the winning team. I was thinking about that, too. I was like, y'all both want the same thing. Calm down, Crow the Deviant.
And then my thing was, somehow Gilgamesh says a few words to Thena, and then all of a sudden, she's just not out of it anymore. It's like she never has another mad weary attack ever again. And somehow she's cured. And I was like, what? And then they cremate. They have the time in this movie to have a whole ass funeral, which I was glad for. A lot of movies don't let you take the time to mourn, but I was like, damn. So y'all just left Ajak in the field.
I thought about that too. I was like, where is Ajak? Y'all just, okay, just Gilgamesh. All right. But damn, that was some shit, wasn't it? Okay, first of all, they all know the world is ending within like 2 days. And they're like, let's just have a quick little funeral.
Their flight patterns don't make sense. Like the order in which they went to go get everybody. Because let's just spell this out right here. Okay. Icarus is the first Eternal to make contact with any other Eternal, right? So you see Icarus go to London to Cersei and Sprite, right? Cersei, Sprite, and Icarus, they go to South Dakota to get Ajak.
Yeah.
Ajak's dead. So then they go to... Now, where the hell was Kingo?
Kingo,
they go somewhere to Kingo where he's shooting a Bollywood movie. So I assume somewhere in Asia. Okay? They do that. Then they go to Gilgamesh and Thena in Australia. Yeah. Then they go to the Amazon somewhere to get Druid.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then where did they go next?
Next, who was next?
Fastos. Oh, they go to Chicago.
Yeah.
So they left the United States. You just see where I'm going with this? How does it don't make sense?
Listen, I understand why they went for Ajak first, you know, with her being the leader and all, but then what was the order of the rest of this? Like, you didn't need Kingo for the rest of this. You could have just went and rode on to Chicago, you know? Like,
exactly. Well, their main plan was that they were going to try and delay the emergence of Tiamat, the newest Celestial. So that's why they went and got Druig. Like, that
well, Druig made sense. Yeah, Druig's probably the only one that makes sense in this order of events.
Actually, you know what? I feel like because we don't know how a proper emergence is supposed to go with with Ajax as the Prime Eternal, I feel like Druig's powers most likely have something to do with the emergence. You know what I'm saying?
That's kind of where they were at too, because we didn't even say it, but at this point their whole plan is to get Druig and like amplify Druig's power somehow, which is why we need Fastos, and then they just want to put the Eternal back to sleep until they can figure out what the fuck to do. And I was like, that's actually kind of a shitty plan.
They want to get humanity to leave, which it's not a horrible plan, especially because
it's a pretty terrible plan.
It's not completely terrible. I'm saying,
let's put this god back to sleep and then figure it out.
Knowing what we know, like with the extended Marvel Cinematic Universe, with like Guardians of the Galaxy and the ability, and like Loki, Thor, the ability to leave and go to other worlds, it does, like, it's a stupid plan, but it's not completely stupid. Like, I could see where they got it from, at least. It's not just like, I don't know, what movie has a really stupid plan? Avengers Age of Ultron.
You know, this one was kind of equally that bad, I think. Because how their plan is like, okay, we're going to take Druig and then we're going to put a god to sleep and then let's figure it out. Like,
they said we're going to delay the emergence and then they were planning to try and move humanity. Like, it's not the smartest plan ever, but it's one that does at least make sense. It doesn't make logical sense, but I could see how if you have no other option, that would be the thing that you come up with. So we go to Fastos and he's going by the name Phil. And he's given up. He claims he doesn't use his powers anymore. He's just given up on technology. Also, with Brian Tyree Henry, and he looks handsome as hell.
And this is the only time Marvel has actually put a gay character in a movie, and it made sense.
Not an exclusively gay one.
This one wasn't exclusive, but it's the only one that was actually right, because he was actually married. He has a kid. You know, they even kiss, and I was like, Disney, I thought you hated us.
But then my thing is, though, like, he's going by Phil, but here's the thing that I don't think anybody understood, because I had to look up, I wanted to see who played his handsome husband and why is he credited as Ben Stoss. So he's going by Phil Stoss, and then the son is Jack Stoss.
That's funny. That's not even like good. It's just like how in the Gay Men Run, how everything was basically their name. Like Ike Harris is Icarus.
And that's the thing they dropped the ball on, because when Fastos starts trying to introduce his friends, he's like, oh, these are my friends from college. This is, I don't remember what bullshit name he gives Cersei, but he's like, and this is Isaac. And I was like, you could have said, this is my friend Ike Harris.
Yeah, that part I was like, man, you really missed the, that would have been a great joke. Honestly, Ike, it would have been great.
Harris.
Oh, but they said Isaac. Either way, okay.
Fastos. Oh, and they make the funniest joke ever. His son is like, Daddy, you're lying, because that's Superman. I saw him on the news.
They made a lot of DC references, which was kind of surprising. That was like, okay. I didn't know y'all could do that, honestly. I thought that there was a whole war going on, but whatever. But they did. It was kind of funny as shit.
And then, so Fastos is literally like, I'm not helping y'all. You want to tell me that the world is ending in a few days and you expect me to not spend this time with my family? He's like, I don't use my powers anymore. And then Icarus turns and he does the unthinkable. He just shoots lasers at the window and then it just completely dissipates because this house is fortified. And he's kind of an asshole. He's like, what? I bet you this table that we're all sitting at could stand the test of time or some, I don't remember what he said, but he takes his fist and he's like, wait, no, Donald. And he slams his fist into this table and it completely collapses. He's like, this is from IKEA. Thanks, you jackass.
It's fall collection, IKEA.
It was a nice table though. I low key would buy one. And then, so he was like, I'm not leaving my family. If I got here, goodbye. And his husband is like, listen, we don't want to die, so I'm gonna need you to go. And then they go to get Makari. So once again, proving that this flight plan and these meetups don't make sense, because the Domo, their ship, is in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Where Makari is, she's just been chilling there for years. She's got her little Twinkies in a box. She's got all kinds of crazy things. Like, she's just having a good time. Well, she, you know, my thing is also, this ship was underground, so I was like, how are you getting out to grab these Twinkies like that?
Well, I just think if she's a speedster, probably like Quicksilver in the Flash, she can probably vibrate her molecules and just go through shit.
Probably. I mean, it makes sense, but they,
but like, know, what's funny is the Domo is under an archaeological dig site. Like, so what was your plan when they eventually dig down there, Makari?
Actually, was it, or was that just like kind of like a a front so that way people don't come looking, you know? Were those real people?
I wasn't sure which, because like it didn't seem like it was hard for them to get to. So I want to know if people were really excavating down there or if Makari was just like, yep, this will keep people away.
I feel like it might have been, I didn't think about this before, but I think it's probably that one. Like, it was just kind of a front so that way people weren't going to come look at it. Which, that's really smart. Okay, that's the way I'm going with this. That's it. So either way, Makari's just underground in this ship. But if those are fake people, I guess that's how she's getting out easy. There we go. Yeah,
and then Fastos, like, he's like, I need to get to my workshop and my tools. So he's, first of all, being fine. And then he's just like, blip, zop, zippy, zap, zap, zopping. And he's using his powers. And he's like, I've come up with an idea. I call it the Unimind. So basically the idea is for them to use the Unimind that they use anyway as Eternals. That has never, they've never done it before, which was shocking to me. They channel all their energy into Druid and so that he can take control of the Celestial and, you know, delay the emergence. But Icarus is like, no. And Kingo is like, Icarus, you know, you ain't never led us wrong. Even though I was like, Icarus ain't never led shit. He was not, he was not the ruler. I mean, he's not the Prime Eternal. And also Ajax clearly wanted Cersei to be the Prime Eternal. So I was like, Kingo, no. Anyway, so
this Icarus is when we get like another flashback and we found out what I saw the entire movie was that Icarus is the asshole who killed
Icarus definitely Ajak. Killed Ajak. As soon as we saw Ajak dead as hell posed in the field, I was like, oh, so Pretty Boy did it, because he's the only one who was unaccounted for. He's the only one who never said anything about what he had been doing before, and there was no indication of anything, like any life that he had lived before.
No, so we figured out that Ajak is dead only because of Icarus. And then Icarus is basically like Team Arishem. He's like, this is our task. This is what we're supposed to do. This is what I'm here for. So that's what I'm going to do. But then still.
And then in the flashback, we get more Ajak, because you find out that like they were literally, it was like six days ago. Like, so they've known all week. Like, that's what the earthquakes throughout the movie have been, the emergence of Tiamat. Like, they're worldwide earthquakes. Ajak tells Icarus, like, for some reason the blip made the emergence happen faster, which is interesting. The way that the Avengers, you know, pulled together and like the strength of humanity made her doubt the Arishem and the Celestials. But Ajax words ain't touching Icarus. He's like, you on bullshit. And I knew you was finna be on bullshit. So he took her to this place where the deviants, there were some deviants who were like trapped in ice and had been frozen for thousands of years or whatever. But because of global, you know how because of global warming, they found Captain America. Yep, we done found some deviants. And he just throws her down there.
Because, see, again, if they could all fly like they're supposed to, this would have solved that problem. But he basically throws her in a pit to fight for her life against four deviants, I think.
There's a gun down there, but it's from somebody who had already been killed.
Yeah, so what is a gun going to do against four deviants? So this is how Crow comes to life, because apparently he was trapped in ice and he can just steal people's powers, which is interesting. How can this one deviant do that? I don't know. They don't explain it, but yeah, the deviants aren't
intelligent in the movie. They're just like, they're like animals.
They're monsters. They're literally just like demons, basically, just hopping around. But, you know, so you know, there was Ajak. Yeah, and then Crow also like puts more powers into the other three deviants and gives them like wings and shit. I was like, what is that? Doesn't even mean anything, but whatever. So we move on, and now we all have the Unimind plan, which is actually a good plan. Like, they took something really ugly from the comics and made it into something that wasn't as ugly in the movies, because the Unimind is just stupid as fuck, but it's not it's not dumb.
Like in the movie it was cool to see the, like they were like, okay, this, we got a purpose, we are doing this, you know what I'm saying? Like the Unimind, they lean on it, and it looks, they don't explain it enough in the comics. Or they explain it too much and then they don't explain it enough. And it, like, you don't ever know what the boundaries are. It's like when people just keep, when they just keep doing shit and you're like, okay, so when does this stop? When does it start? What are the parameters in which we could use this? And they were like, here are some clearly defined boundaries. We are going to use it to pour all of our powers into Druid. We will all connect. And then we will all, it makes sense. They're like, okay.
Yeah, it works. And it looks really cool, too. Like, visually, this was really cool looking whenever they did the Unimind thing. And then they move on, you know. Icarus, it comes in. He's like, this isn't happening. I'm going to stop all y'all. Like, y'all can't beat me. And they're like, want to bet? And then Icarus flies away.
Like, first of all, he says one a bet, and then Icarus starts beating the dog shit out of them because
he flies away first to go to the epicenter of the convergence, basically, and then he just sits there and waits. And I was like, all right, at least you know what you're doing. And then when
it's time, once they form the uni mind, or once they get a handle on what they're gonna do, Icarus comes back. Druig is like, bitch, I know you killed Ajax. I've been waiting on your ass to be the villain. Period. He tells them that Ajax told him years and years and years ago what was going to happen, and he didn't tell anybody else. Icarus is like, this is the way things are supposed to go, so that's how it's going to be. And he's literally like, and if y'all try and stop me, first of all, I've already killed one Eternal. I have no problem killing the rest of y'all. I don't want to, but I'll do it.
Yep, and then... This fight scene, though, at the end was so good. Like, I was stressed out the whole time. Oh, wait.
You can't leave this part out. So Sprite leaves with Icarus, and then Kingo is like, I don't want to help. I don't want to fight you guys, so I'm leaving. Then they all go to have this fight scene at the end, and it was restful.
Yeah, fuck Sprite, first of all. I know Sprite's a child, but fuck Sprite. But then also, I kind of respect Kingo. He was like, we're all friends and family here, so I'm not going to do anything. I'll see you at home.
Kingo really said, I'll see you guys back on the ship after the emergence.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I respect it. Like, it's a stupid decision, but I respect it. But then this fight scene happens, and it is so stressful. The entire fight, it's like a good 20 minutes or so. Like, this is a long fight, and it is so good. But long story short, Fastos pulls through for everybody, first of all, right? Because he beats the shit out of Icarus.
And does, like, it's not just Fastos, because Druig starts to facilitate the uni mind to to delay the emergence or to stop the emergence. Icarus blasted the shit out of him, and then they're like, okay, Cersei, it's up to you. So then Makari, Thena, and Fastos start showing what's up. They start showing how these powers can be used. And Makari, of course, our beautiful Makari, like, paraphrasing what something that Druig said, I don't get how all the other Eternals seem to miss this obvious tension between them, but because he's like, oh, my beautiful Makari. And they're like, girl, when did this happen? 20,000 years ago, bitch.
So whenever he blasted, whenever Icarus blasted Druig, and like, he first of all, like, puts him layers deep into the earth, I was like, holy shit, like, unnecessary, but all right.
First of all, he looked fine as hell. But
and then Makari beats the dog shit.
She's not having it. This is the best example of super speed that I have seen in a long time, especially in live action, because when I tell you she is attacking from different angles, she's coming in at different speeds. Like, she literally cannot be touched. Every time he tries to get a bead on where she's going to be, she recovers so quickly and is like, pop, 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 I'm on your ass.
It's what they tried to do in Batman versus Superman with the Flash. This is what they thought they were doing.
Was the Flash in Batman v? You mean Justice League, don't you?
Was it Justice League? Whichever one, where the fucking Flash just fell apart and didn't work.
Oh, you mean right before he fell on top of Wonder Woman's breast and we were all uncomfortable?
Yeah, that one. So either way, this is what they thought they were doing with the Flash in the DC universe. Makari is like top tier, what you should be doing.
Makari ate that. And
she did. Yeah, so, I mean, long story short, this fight lasts a long time. It's very, very well put together. Like, very well. This is such a good fight scene. Obviously, Icarus loses.
Athena ends up in a whole side fight with Crow the Deviant, but she ends up wearing that ass out.
And should, mad at it. And would. Yeah.
And then since Cersei is the only person besides Druig who could even possibly stop the emergence. Tell me why Sprite's little childish ass decides that she's going to transform into Ajax and try and manipulate her to distract her.
That shit pissed me off. That made me so mad. Oh my god. Fuck Sprite. See, I don't care if you're fucking 12.
She stabbed her. It came out of nowhere. She was just like, and I was like, damn. And then because Sprite is like a child, Sprite is, it's not just like in the comics where Sprite wanted to fuck Cersei and was like, she's had sex with every male Eternal but me. She wants to be her. And she's like, you get to live a life among them, and I'm a kid, and we used to be happy. And then she's like, I can't wait for us to get to the next planet. I'm done here. And I was like, and she's literally giving a villain speech. I was like, purr, kid, because Icarus didn't quite hit it. It was just everything that he said was too sexy. So I was kind of mesmerized. I was like, bad, bad you. But as she's literally, this little girl is giving a performance. Tell me why Druig then came out of nowhere and slapped the shit out of her with a rock.
Hit her with a rock in the back of the head. So then fucking Icarus is like tied up literally because of Phastos's powers, which were kind of, I don't even know. His powers is technology. So he made this really cool technology that was shooting rings and shit, which kind of trapped Icarus. He was. So Icarus is now stuck underneath all these rings. Can't move. He's losing. And the coolest shit happens at this point, which is when they perform another Unimind. And then it's Celestial.
Oh, well, Icarus does, like, he does break through somehow. But when Cersei forms that Unimind.
Yes, with the Celestial involved. So with now another
flash drive. Another flashback.
Yeah, the power that she put forth was insane. So obviously they don't put the Celestial to sleep. Instead, she turns him into fucking stone. Like, who saw that coming?
Insane. And not only is it stone, it's just poking out the ocean.
His whole, like, top of his head is poking out the ocean. It's in the clouds. This motherfucker is huge. Like, big. So that was the coolest shit.
And then Icarus, like, because there's no... I was wondering how this was going to go if they succeeded, you know? Well, obviously they had to succeed because it's a superhero movie, but Icarus is like, I'm sorry. And then goes into the fucking sun. I was like, bitch, what?
Just flies away into the freaking sun.
And I was like, oh, hold on, because he just killed himself. But I wasn't sure because you remember in, what is it, All-Star Superman? Where Clark is dying the whole time. And then at the end, he like flies into the sun and he's regenerated.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if it was like, I just killed myself or I'm finna go be on the sun.
I'm pretty sure
I'm gonna come back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what it's gonna be. Because, yeah, but Hyperion is also an Eternal and Hyperion flies into the sun to get his powers back. So I was like, that's what's happening here. Like, there's no other way.
Yeah,
it happens. And then, so that's exactly where I think they're going with that. Because they're not gonna kill him off. They killed off two other main characters.
So maybe, I feel like because of the World Forge and like them introducing the concept, because Arishem told Cersei that their memories like got wiped after every emergence and that they were stored like in the World Forge or whatever, or stored wherever he is. I feel like since that's like the machine that the Eternals got reborn out of, which if you follow our Instagram, I posted a picture of it, so you should have just been ready with that knowledge. I feel like they're all going to come back to life. So I feel like them dying doesn't even matter right now.
I thought the same thing. Now that all this happened, the team kind of splits up. Half the team is going to go to space to find other Eternals to try to rectify the situation. But it's like there's no situation to rectify. Like, they're just doing what they're supposed to be.
Gets turned into a human.
Yeah, fuck Sprite. Let the bitch get old and die. Fuck Sprite.
Shut up.
They have to, because it's not like the actual actress is going to be 12 forever, you know? They have to do something with her.
And that's what they do, ironically, in the Neil Gaiman front. Sprite fucked all of them over and turned into a human and is, like, living his best life as a child star or whatever.
Like I said, there was a lot of odes to the comic books, but they did in subtle ways, too. But this one wasn't so subtle. But there was a lot of actual subtle ones. But now that the team is all split up,
It's Thena, Makari, and Druig. They're out in space looking for other Eternals, trying to tell them the truth or whatever.
Which, again, what the fuck is Druig going to do when he goes to an alien planet?
And control them aliens? Like his villain ass should?
No, they need to leave him alone. Druig just needs to go back to Earth and his little Peru...
No, because he should not be there manipulating people's minds. That's not right.
I mean, it's not right anywhere you go into space.
It's better to keep him in space. It's going to sound bad, but I'd rather sacrifice some aliens for the cause than my own people.
See? So with the Celestials, so that's what I'm saying. Arishem didn't do nothing wrong. He was just doing what he's supposed to be doing. Neither did Tiamat, who was just trying to literally be born. Yeah.
But you know what? That was kind of ambiguous too, because when Cersei said it was like Tiamat joined in their Unimind, I was like, does that mean that? Because if you, again, read the Neil Gaiman, the Celestial, the sleeping Celestial that is not being born on Earth, it was already alive. I don't remember why he was in prison there or whatever, but he starts to wake up. And then he says, he's like literally just poking out of that park in New York that's in every movie. And he's like, I'm going to judge humanity. Like, I'll sleep and I'll wait here because humanity is kind of great. So I was like, does that mean that Tiamat like empathized with what they were doing and decided to help them?
I think it was more so he was literally just being born, like seconds after he was being born. It was like, oh, what's this? Like a curious mind, you know? So he accidentally joins. But then that's the way, I don't know. That part is very ambiguous.
I feel like it was an accident. I feel like that was very deliberate, because the next part of the movie, so they're all, you know, they're all leaving. Athena, Makari, Druid, they all leave. Fastos is, you know, with his family, obviously. Cersei, Kingo, and Sprite are all together, weirdly, because Cersei is handing Sprite right off to Kingo, because you can't stay with me after you done stabbed my ass. Mm-hmm. She's not bitter about it, though. I guess that's just, you know, that eternal logic, because...
Yeah, when you've been alive thousands of years, you're kind of... Yeah.
You can't... Yeah. I'm not sleeping around you, because you can't be trusted. So, that's when they start introducing, like, the rest of the plot, because... Or the plot, the setup for the next phase of the MCU. Cersei calls Dane in the middle of the movie, and she's like, hey, you know, you always said you wanted to make it right with your uncle. You might as well do that. And as we know, Dane's uncle is the original Black Knight, the bad guy. And at the end of the movie, when she's with him in the park, he's like, Cersei, there are things about my family. My family's complicated. And then Arishem kidnaps all the Eternals who are on Earth. He's like, oh, bet y'all thought y'all ass got away with it, but you didn't. Humanity can stay as it is for right now, but I'm gonna come back and judge them. And then all of a sudden, everybody who's on the Domo, they're like, why are they suddenly out of contact, like, with us? Because he's taken Kingo, Cersei, and Fastos. So, like, why are they out of contact? And they're like, maybe we need to go back. And then Harry Styles pops up.
Yeah, he pops up with Patton Oswalt, which is... Yeah, that was such a weird thing. But yeah, no, he pops up and he's basically like, I'm Thanos's brother.
Surprise. Well, no, first Patton Oswalt literally introduces him, and he's got all these titles. And I was like, don't give a damn, don't give a damn, don't give a damn. And then he says Star Fox, and I was like, what? And then I look up and there's Harry Styles.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm Thanos's brother. And you're like, okay, I don't know which way they're going to go with it. I have no idea. I don't know if that was just a name drop so people would be like interested, and then he's probably not going to be a bigger role later on. I really don't know. I don't know. I think it'll be at least interesting to see what they do, because I have literally no clue what the fuck they're
going
to do with
that. I don't know where they're going. I know they're definitely going to lean into the Black Knight storyline, because in the next post-credit scene, they show Dane. He opens the case for an enchanted sword, which is obviously the ebony blade of the Black Knight. And then a voice tells him, are you sure you want to do that, Mr. Whitman, or something? And a lot of people think that it's Mahershala Ali making his first appearance in the MCU as Blade, which I'm excited for. You know, as I will tell anybody who will listen to me, I think Blade is the best comic book movie ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's good. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, because who knows? There's so much open-ended context. They're doing so much in this phase 4. Are we in phase 4? I don't know, whatever phase we're in, they're doing so much bullshit, and it's like, you're kind of throwing a lot in here.
My like thing is a lot. I wasn't interested. I don't want to say I don't enjoy Marvel movies, but I don't really see the point of having an interconnected universe. I feel like it doesn't hit the same things for me as it does for other people. It's just like, oh, okay. So, but when you have to watch a bunch of other stuff to understand something, it just kind of...
There's just so much that they're trying to put into this. And it's kind of like, why? First of all, okay, two things. First of all, they just keep doing the same story over and over again with different characters. And I'm over it. I'm so over it. And then second of all, you can only... Like you just said, there's so much that you're trying to put into this movie. I don't want to watch fucking 19 movies to understand what happens in the next Avengers or whatever team they're going to have.
Because,
like,
and then not even just the movies, but the TV shows too, because I think it was like a third episode of What If. It was predicated on, or no, fourth episode. You had to have watched Doctor Strange and understood it. Since I didn't watch the movie, I was like, oh, was that Dormammu? He was the villain. I was like, oh, Baron Mordo was in that? Yeah, I didn't care, so I didn't know.
Yeah, and there's that too. They're making a bunch of TV shows that are supposed to interconnect with the MCU, and it's like, we don't have time for this. Why are you doing this to us? Because remember back in the day when we just had cartoons? Could just watch anything. Yeah, and we were just happy with our cartoons, The Amazing Spider-Man, you know, these kind of things. What happened to that? We don't need fucking, not even 15, it's more like 50 fucking intertwining movie shows. Short stories, comic, like, we don't need this. You're doing a lot.
That's my favorite thing. Not to make it as a Marvel versus DC culture war, but that's my favorite thing about DC Comics, because they truly don't give a damn. They will have 47 books out that all take place in different universes with the same characters. They will have 40 billion animated movies coming out every year. Every single one has a different voice cast. They don't keep the Superman consistent. They don't keep the Batman consistent. Lois Lane, none of that shit. They're the one thing I've seen them do in, like, they do use a bunch of the same actors, but like, the only continuity I've seen in like years is that the guy who plays John Constantine in the animated is the John Constantine from Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's it. I love it. Messy.
And that's kind of why we're going to switch to DC next week. Because we've done a lot of Marvel lately. Haven't you realized that? Like, we've done a lot.
Oh, yeah. Even the comic book we read.
But yeah, any final thoughts, I guess?
Oh, Salma Hayek's titties cannot be stopped. That's my only real thought. Like, it was a good enough movie. I had fun. But they all had on these like vacuum seal armor, and Salma Hayek and Richard Madden, they were serving body, yaddy, 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 yaddy.
They had so much titties in these costumes that do not shape your body, right? But they still had body. I was like, how?
It seems like it should be impossible. And it doesn't look like that they were fit to be appealing on anyone. Person. They look like they were made to look functional and to have a uniform kind of aesthetic, even though that they were all noticeably different. But they can't be stopped, clearly. Because
That being said, though, they did have great costuming in the movie, even if it wasn't form-fitting like most. It wasn't sexualized, basically. It wasn't sexualized. But no, this movie was really, really good. Everyone should see it. It's not the best Marvel movie, but it also doesn't feel like a Marvel movie, which makes it better. So, you know.
Yeah, I will say that this is probably the exemption to them constantly making the same movie over and over and over again. Because it's a very different movie, like the way that it's formulated and the style and even the aesthetics are very different, because I could tell they probably shot on location a lot instead of like just using green screen in studio, which was cool.
You also need to see this movie because we tried to put 2 hours and 37 minutes into 1 hour. So we obviously missed a lot just talking about it. So go see it. So
everybody's fine. And that's all for this week's episode of True Believers.
This week, we'd like to give a special shout out to Jordan from The Fandom Optimist. I was actually on his show 2 days ago, I think, where I gave actually my very first thoughts about Eternals before I even gave them to Christian. So go listen to that episode. He's a lot of fun. The show was a lot of fun. But we will see you next Wednesday on the 24th to talk about Batman, The Long Halloween.
We are available on all major streaming platforms. And if you really like the show, please leave us a review and continue sharing with your friends. We really appreciate it. And as always, if you want to leave a suggestion on what we read or watch, you can find a DM us on social media, email us, leave a voicemail, or join our Discord. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.